101.9 FM.
From the Learning Lab at WEAA 88.9 FM on the campus of Morgan State University, the School of Global Journalism and Communication presents the Morgan News Hour. Welcome to the Morgan News Hour. I'm Randy Reed, News Director here at WEAA. Thank you for joining us. Let's take a look at the stories coming up here on the Morgan News Hour. The White House Task Force has met today. While cases are dropping, it doesn't look like it here in Maryland. If you or someone you know receives Social Security, you may see an increase in monthly benefits. Finally, the Morgan State University Choir is performing tomorrow. We'll tell you where. But first, let's start where we start pretty much every day, COVID, and the COVID numbers here in Maryland. The Maryland Department of Health updated its COVID-19 numbers this morning. 1,113 new cases were reported in 24 hours. That's an increase of 702 in just one day. Currently, the total number of hospitalizations are at 762. Sadly, 16 deaths have been reported in the last 24 hours, and the state's positivity rate is 3.85%. Dr. Anthony Fauci said COVID may be eradicated, but he believes it might not ever be eradicated, but believes it can be controlled. Fauci mentioned this at today's White House task force meeting. Vaccination rates in the U.S. are on the rise. White House COVID coordinator Jeff Zients noted that 7 million Americans have received the Pfizer booster shots. Zients insisted vaccines are free, safe, and convenient.
So if you're unvaccinated or eligible for a booster, please go get a shot, and it will protect you, your loved ones, and your community.
CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky says COVID cases and hospitalizations are still trending downward.
92,600 cases per day, with a decrease of about 12% over the previous week. Hospital admissions was about 7,080 per day, also a decrease of about 11% from the previous week.
There are still about 66 million Americans who remain unvaccinated. Software used to monitor students in Baltimore City could be saving lives. Student reporter Kendra Pugh has more.
The Baltimore Public Schools are using software that alerts officials when a student using one of the system's laptops might be considering suicide. The Beacon software came about during the pandemic when the system loaned thousands of families laptops for students to use at home. According to the Baltimore Sun, since March, 9 students have been identified through Go Garden's Beacon software as having severe mental crisis and were taken to the emergency room. According to Stacy Davis, the Baltimore City Schools Coordinator of Media and Instructional Technology, the students never had any mental health care. The software is raising privacy and equality concerns. Two reports warn that such technology like beacons could be used for disciplinary purposes. The software could unintentionally out LGBTQ students or monitor economically disadvantaged students more often, since the school laptops may be their only devices. I am Kendra Pugh, reporting for the Morgan News Hour.
Now let's take a look at stories around our region.
Let's take a look at the stories around our region. A federal judge has blocked Baltimore City officials from banning a conservative Roman Catholic media outlet from holding a prayer rally at a city-owned pavilion during a U.S. bishops' meeting next month. The judge ruled late Tuesday that St. Michael's Media is likely to succeed on its claims that the city discriminated against it on the basis of its political views and violated its First Amendment free speech right. The Michigan-based fringe groups wants to hold a rally and conference at the waterfront Pavilion on November 16th. The city says the gathering poses a threat to public safety and says that the group cheered on rioters who stormed the U.S. Capitol in January. And Montgomery County police say a homeowner who shot and killed a man who got into his Poolsville home won't face charges. Police say the homeowner called the Emergency Communications Center Monday morning to report that a man was trying to break into his home. While on the phone, police say the homeowner fired at the man, striking and killing him. Police have identified the man who was killed as Harry Powell of Washington, D.C. The homeowner didn't know Powell, but police say it appears that Powell had been sleeping in the basement of the home for some time time without the homeowner's permission. Police said Tuesday that no criminal charges will be filed against the homeowner. I'm Brigitte McMillan, and that's a look at the other news happening around the region.
Here's a look at your weather around the region. Tonight, a slight chance of showers before 8 p.m., then a slight chance of showers between 8 p.m. and 2 a.m. Partly cloudy with a low around 62. Light and variable wind. Chance of rain is 20%. Thursday, mostly sunny with a high near 80. Northwest wind, 5 to 7 miles per hour. Thursday night, partly cloudy with a low around 63. Light northwest wind. Friday, mostly sunny with a high near 83. Calm wind becoming south around 6 miles per hour in the afternoon. Friday night, a slight chance of showers after 2 a.m. Mostly cloudy with a low around 66. Chance of rain is 20%. Saturday, showers likely after 8 a.m. Mostly sunny with a high near 78. Chance of rain is 70%. Saturday night, mostly clear with a low around 51. Sunday, sunny with a high near 67. Sunday night, clear with a low around 50. I'm Cheyenne Boggs, reporting for the Morgan News Hour.
I'm so filled with emotion about what just happened. It's extraordinary. I hope I never recover from this. I hope that I can maintain what I feel now. I don't want to lose it.
That was Hollywood's Captain Kirk, 90-year-old William Shatner, after he returned from being blasted into outer space this morning. He set out Wednesday morning for the final frontier aboard the ship built by Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin company. The Star Trek hero becomes the oldest person to ride a rocket. The fully automated spacecraft reached an altitude of 66.5 miles over the West Texas desert. The up-and-down flight lasted about 10 minutes with Shatner and his three fellow passengers, where they made the successful journey by parachuting back to the ground. Governors in Florida and Texas are fighting the vaccine mandates. American's Urban Radio Network's Ebony McMorris reports.
AURN News.
I'm Ebony McMorris.
Why would you be taking steps that prevent the saving of lives, that make it more difficult to save lives in across the country or in any state?
That was Press Secretary Jen Psaki commenting on governors in Texas and Florida fighting vaccine mandates.
Fit a familiar pattern that we've seen of putting politics ahead of public health.
She also pointed to the vaccines that exist already in those states.
Vaccine requirements have been standard in both the Lone Star State, Texas, and the Sunshine State, Florida, in schools for decades, whether polio, measles, mumps, rubella, the chickenpox.
In Texas, Governor Greg Abbott issued another executive order trying to crack down on vaccine mandates. Now, previously, he allowed businesses to decide whether or not they wanted to impose the mandates on their employees and customers. But in a reversal, he is now saying they cannot do that. For AURN News, I'm Ebony McMorris.
If you receive Social Security, you may see an increase in monthly benefits. The AP's Sagar Migani reports.
It's the biggest cost of living adjustment in nearly four decades, a 5.9% increase in benefits, translating to about $92 a month for the average retired worker. Over the past decade, cost of living adjustments averaged 1.65% a year. The jump comes following a burst in inflation as the economy struggles under the virus pandemic. Annual inflation is up 5.4% from a year ago, matching a 13-year high. The increase will affect about one in five Americans, nearly 70 million people. Sagar Magani, Washington.
You've heard over the past few days about the shipping backlog and cargo ships sitting outside shipping ports like in Los Angeles. Do you know why the shipping issue is important and why prices are going higher for everyday things like glass bottles? NPR's Scott Horsley reports.
In the world of global commerce, Daniel Lieberson is a pretty small fish. He's the owner and self-described vinegar geek at Lindera Farms in Delaplaine, Virginia.
We're a tiny little artisanal producer of shelf-stable, sustainable pantry goods.
Lieberson makes vinegar seasoned with hand-foraged wild onions and hot sauce from heirloom peppers grown on nearby farms. The supply of ingredients can be fickle depending on the weather and local growing conditions, but he's never had to worry about finding bottles to package his products until now.
The winds of nature are less daunting than the winds of what is supposed to be an organized, structured supply chain. But here we are.
Demand for bottles has outstripped supply in recent months, and Lieberson found himself at the back of the line, pushed aside as suppliers catered to customers placing bigger orders. He was finally able to find bottles in Italy. They're now on a cargo ship headed to the East Coast. He's just hoping they'll arrive in time for the busy holiday season, which typically accounts for about half his annual sales.
There's a captain of a shipping vessel who holds my life in his hands. Basically, if anything goes wrong with the shipment, I'm screwed.
And Lieberson's not the only one in this leaky supply chain boat. Chief Economist David Osgo of the Distilled Spirits Council of the United States says some distilleries are also having a hard time packaging their whiskey and rye, which could lead to the occasional bare shelf in the liquor store.
We're definitely hearing that there's a shortage of bottles. We encourage anybody that wants a special bottle for Christmas to start shopping for it now, because you might have to make two or three trips to your local retailer.
So how does this happen? Scott DeFife, president of the Glass Packaging Institute, insists American glassmakers are still churning out plenty of bottles.
There is no shortage of the raw materials to make glass in this country, and the plants are all operating at full capacity to make new glass containers.
But 20 to 30% of the bottles used in the U.S. are typically imported from Europe or Asia. So part of the problem is transportation. A lot of bottles may be stuck in the same cargo traffic jam that's holding up so many other imports. And because domestic glass plants are already running at full steam, customers whose imported bottles are delayed may have a hard time finding substitutes at the last minute.
Demand is high. Logistics are slightly out of whack. There's import congestion, and production is fairly well operating at max capacity. So put those things together, and there's going to be some wrinkles.
What's more, those wrinkles can feed on each other. Just ask Paul Guglielmo, who makes and bottles a signature line of pasta sauce in Rochester, New York.
We were told at least twice that a specific jar wouldn't be available for at least a month. The strain it puts on us is you get scared that you're not going to be able to find the materials. And so how do you react? Well, you react by buying more of it.
Remember how people panic purchased toilet paper last year? That kind of stockpiling can make shortages worse, while also driving up the price. Pasta sauce jars that used to cost Guglielmo 33 cents apiece now cost 47 cents, a 42% increase before he sliced his first tomato. Guglielmo swallowed some of that increase, but he's also raised his own prices in the grocery store.
I think the whole way down the supply chain, everyone makes that decision and they decide, are we going to eat all of this? Are we going to eat some of it? Or are we going to pass all of it?
The stockpile of empty jars in Guglielmo's warehouse helps him sleep better at night, but it also costs a lot of money that he'd just as soon not have tied up.
I walk by pallets and pallets and pallets of unused glass, and of course we're going to use it, and I want it here, and it should be here, but I look at it as just a big pile of cash sitting there.
Lieberson, the small-scale vinegar maker, can't afford to keep that kind of inventory on hand, even if he could locate the bottles. Right now, he's sitting on big vats of vinegar and hot sauce with fingers crossed that his bottles arrive in time for the holidays.
Listen, I'm a neurotic Jewish guy, and I got to tell you, heart attack inducing is the word that comes to mind.
If you do find your local store is out of your favorite vinegar, bourbon, or pasta sauce this winter, Guglielmo says please try to be patient.
We're trying. I promise. The people that are in the supply chain are working very, very hard. There is no part of anyone that I know of that is sitting down with their feet kicked up saying, I don't feel like working right now. That's not happening. People are working all day very hard.
Guglielmo's glass supplier tells him things might ease up by next spring, something we could all raise a glass to, assuming we can find one. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Well, help is on the way. The White House says it's brokered an agreement for the Port of Los Angeles to become a 24-hour, 7-days-a-week operation. It's an effort to relieve the supply chain bottlenecks and move stranded container ships that are driving prices higher for everyday Americans.
Today, Walmart, our nation's largest retailer, is committing to go all in on moving its products 24/7 from the ports to their stores nationwide. Specifically, Walmart is committing as much as a 50% increase in the use of off-peak hours over the next several weeks. Additionally, FedEx and UPS, two of our nation's biggest freight movers, are committing today to significantly increase the amount of goods they're moving at night. FedEx and UPS are the shippers for some of our nation's largest stores, but they also ship for tens of thousands of small businesses all across America. Their commitment to go all in on 24/7 operations means that businesses of all sizes will get their goods on shelves faster and more reliably.
The Morgan State University Choir will perform tomorrow. We'll tell you more. We also have part two of our interview with J.R. Jackson, radio host for CBS Radio. Make sure you download the WEAA app to take us with you 24 hours a day. You're listening to WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. We'll be right back.
Personalized just for you with the best in neo soul, R&B, and the classics. Valencia Charmaine presents Holistic Choices with the Balance, arts and entertainment that connects our neighbors with something in common. Around Town with Downtown Kevin Brown. Southern Soul with Miss Peach's Brown Bag Music Series. The things that make you feel real good. Mornings with Mikhail, Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. till noon on WEAA 88.9.
On Saturday, October 16th, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., the Baltimore Metropolitan Alumni Chapter of Delta Sigma Theta and the Gamma Omicron Omega Alumni Chapter of Iota Phi Theta will have a pop-up expungement clinic in the North Barclay Green Community Center at 2026 Greenmount Avenue. There will be on-site legal services to help you get a fresh start by clearing your eligible criminal record. Masks are mandatory and COVID guidelines will be strictly enforced. Pre-registration is preferred, but walk-ins are welcome. For registration and more information, Eventbrite under Pop-Up Expungement Clinic.
Welcome back to the Morgan News Hour. Now let's get a look at your weather around the region.
Here's a look at your weather around the region. Tonight, a slight chance of showers before 8 p.m., then a slight chance of showers between 8 p.m. and 2 a.m. Partly cloudy with a low around 62. Light and variable wind. Chance of rain is 20%. Thursday, mostly sunny with a high near 80. Northwest wind, 5 to 7 miles per hour. Thursday night, partly cloudy with a low around 63. Light northwest wind. Friday, mostly sunny with a high near 83. Calm wind becoming south around 6 miles per hour in the afternoon. Friday night, a slight chance of showers after 2 a.m. Mostly cloudy with a low around 66. Chance of rain is 20%. Saturday, showers likely after 8 a.m. Mostly sunny with a high near 78. Chance of rain is 70%. Saturday night, mostly clear with a low around 51. Sunday, sunny with a high near 67. Sunday night, clear with a low around 50. I'm Shine Boggs, reporting for the Morgan News Hour.
If you're looking for something to do around the Morgan State campus tomorrow, join our world-renowned Morgan State University Choir, which is under the direction of Dr. Eric Conway. The Morgan State University Choir will be performing tomorrow, October 14th, at 11 a.m. in the quad in front of Holmes Hall. You won't want to miss it.
In our Wellness Wednesday report, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration issued a recommendation for reduced salt in commercial food products, citing a growing epidemic of preventable diet-related conditions in the country. High sodium intake has long been linked to high blood pressure, which is a leading cause of heart attacks and strokes. The FDA guideline provides voluntary short-term sodium reduction targets for food manufacturers, chain restaurants, and food service operators across more than 150 categories of processed, packaged, and prepared foods. According to the FDA, more than 70% of total sodium intake is from salt added during food manufacturing and commercial food preparation. The agency said the public health benefit of limiting sodium intake is estimated by researchers to result in tens of thousands fewer cases of heart disease and strokes each year, as well as billions of dollars in health care savings over time. I'm Shine Boggs, reporting for the Morgan News Hour.
Here's a segment we call in case you missed it. We highlight our afternoon shows here on WEAA. Today with Dr. K and Two-Way Talk with Anthony McCarthy and Kara Williams. So in case you missed it.
Women report being subjected to coercive sexual contact by age 18. Let's drill down for a second. Let's put a pin right here for just 1 minute. What exactly does that mean, coercive sexual contact? It's the grooming that takes place of our girls by men. That's what that is, that grooming, that, oh, baby, baby, please, you know you're beautiful. Let me give you a ride. Does your daddy know you're out here? Does your mommy know you're looking so good? We know the comments that some men make. Part of this hypersexualization of girls, making girls feel like they're women and they are not. When we participate in this, we are only adding to the trauma that our girls are going through. 17% of Black women experience sexual violence other than rape by intimate partner during that lifetime. For every Black woman and girl who reports rape, at least 15 Black women and girls do not report. Black and brown girls are the least believed when we talk about sexual violence. Let's keep going, because it doesn't stop there. Like, we talk about hypersexualization, when the daddy called and said, no, it leads to pregnancy. Well, let's talk about some other things it leads to that research backs up.
We neighborhoods have to become the power brokers now. See, we have it backwards now in the city, whereas we assume that the power is coming from the figurehead downtown, which is the mayor, and then it's next in line, it's the council people, mm-hmm. right? And so to get things done, folks feel like, well, that's who you have to go to kiss the ring or to get permission to do something. But see, that's opposite of what a democracy of what this is supposed to be. The people should be the power brokers. Mm-hmm. The people of the neighborhood should be the ones who are dictating what is and isn't happening in our neighborhoods. We have an administrative culture, which is very destructive for Baltimore and corrupt. We have an administrative culture where there are a few people downtown who are sitting in offices behind computers, well, since COVID, they're sitting home, and they're making decisions for neighborhoods that they don't even walk through,
mm-hmm.
that they don't even live through, live in, or drive through. They won't dare come in some of these neighborhoods, but these people have the power of making decisions, whether it's decisions affecting neighborhood services, housing, and other quality of life issues that are sometimes unique to certain neighborhoods. We have people who are making decisions downtown, so it's like they force us, or they want us to think we got to come downtown and ask them.
Tune in to WEAA afternoon talk shows here on WEAA starting at 2 p.m. We are now joined by Tariq Turner, who is a senior here at Morgan State. He is also the sports editor for our Morgan State campus newspaper, The Spokesman. Tariq, what's going on in sports?
Hello, WEAA fam. This is Tariq Turner. Morgan State bowling is kicking off their season. Student reporter Gabriel Ortiz has more.
Morgan State bowling is kicking off their season as the Lady Bears head to Youngstown, Ohio this weekend for the Motif Penguin Classic. This multi-day tournament will feature some of the best schools in the nation as they all look to start their season off with a massive win. Head coach Tom Falbo has been a part of the team for 3 years now, with his team progressing bit by bit each season. Last year, the team just barely missed out on qualifying for the MEAC Conference Championship, so it seems the only place left to go from here is into championship contention and hopefully bringing a trophy home to Morgan State University. The team is hoping that the addition of Colombian international Natalia Miranda Vega will put them over the edge in the pursuit of that conference championship. Natalia arrived at Morgan State all the way from Bogota, Colombia, after realizing her passion for bowling was something she simply had to pursue by any means necessary. She has represented Colombia on the national stage at U17, U18, and U20 levels, earning gold medals in all three age groups. I got a chance to catch up with Natalia on the Morgan Sports Show and asked her what a strong start to this weekend will mean for her and the rest of the team as they kick off the season.
I think that with the new recruitments and that we are such a strong team now compared to what we had before, because now we're more like solid. Mm-hmm. I think that's just a great start. So just getting there, we're going to learn a lot. And I think that the best thing that we can do on the first match is just be ourselves, mm-hmm. and be able like to just enjoy the moment. Because mm-hmm. you're not going to win if you're like thinking, I got to win. You just got to do you, because mm-hmm. we're good. And that's all that we need. So I think we're going to learn a lot. I'm excited for that.
An already well-coached, extremely strong team has added a potential superstar in Vega and will be looking to achieve the very best this season, starting in Ohio this weekend. To keep up with the team at the Motie Penguin Classic and throughout the season, be sure to follow at Morgan State Bears on Twitter and Instagram for live updates on both bowling and all Morgan State athletics. Reporting for WEAA, I'm Gabriel Ortiz.
On Monday, we aired Wizards rookie Isaiah Todd's interview from Monday's open practice, which was held in Morgan's Hill Fieldhouse. Like Todd, Wizards head coach Wes Unseld Jr. also has ties to the Baltimore area. Unseld Jr. is from Catonsville, Maryland, and played basketball at Johns Hopkins from 1994 to 1997. Here's what Unseld Jr. said at his media availability on Monday.
Wes, you got practice in your backyard, basically. How was it coming out today?
It was good. It's always a great opportunity to get home. I give our guys a lot of credit after an hour 10 bus ride. We still got something out of it. And, that's always kind of our thought process with anything and everything we do is, let's not just get through it. Let's continue to get better, try to find ways to clean things up, sharpen our minds, and make sure we're all on the same page.
Did you have Wizards people telling you, like, remember now, you're showing out for people, and you're like, yeah, I got stuff to do?
No, I mean, that's part of it. I mean, these are enjoyable things. You get an opportunity to kind of reach out to the community, give back to some degree, but we still, once again, it's a work day. So we're splitting time, but we're also accomplishing two things.
How's Davis doing? It looked like he didn't participate.
Oh, he did. He was fine, and then he felt a little tweak, and then he was just, like, out of caution, just said, just sit. We'll have a good shoot around tomorrow, and hopefully he'll be okay.
And that's in the calf?
Yeah.
What has been the point of emphasis, since the last game? Obviously, talked about three-point defense. Like, what's that process been like for you trying to correct something?
Well, we looked at it, and we watched all of it, and I think it was great because there were healthy conversations about what we did and didn't do. And I think sometimes in your mindset throughout the flow of the game is it's just one specific thing. And then watch the film, you're like, it's everything. So we were able to kind of put that to rest and, have a good practice after that, but at least there was an understanding. We can be better in a lot of facets. So, that's the challenge. Do that. Do better tomorrow.
We asked you a lot about three-point defense, and then I realized you guys had a little bit of trouble shooting three yourself in that game. What was going wrong from your perspective?
Nothing. We generated the right types of threes. Obviously, you got to make some. And I think we will. I mean, it's just, to me, it's a rhythm thing. We got open looks. We generated, the correct type of threes, and I have no problem. Keep shooting those.
Coach, you have a lot of flexibility, particularly at the perimeter and the point guard position. Have you thought that far ahead enough as far as rotations, potentially maybe a four-guard rotation to start or even in the second quarter?
Yeah, to some degree. And I think this is giving us the opportunity to look at different lineups, different groups, different pairings. At some point, we'll have to narrow that scope a bit and really narrow down our top 10, top 9 guys. But, right now, we still have the opportunity to play with those different rotations, those different groups. To your point, the depth is a terrific thing to have. At times, it's a problem, but it's, something we can manage.
When you look at Kuzma as well as KCP being on the championship team, what is the biggest surprise for you seeing them in person versus seeing them on the Lakers last season?
Well, I think you always plan against a certain group. Your perception is different than the reality. And I've said this about Kuz. Obviously, both bring that leadership component. They've played in big moments. Both have won a championship. But his playmaking ability, which was somewhat surprising to me. And part of that's just the makeup of that roster. He didn't really have the opportunity to showcase that. So having him here, having him, putting him in those different positions has allowed us to see some of that. Well, yeah, just great. Anytime you can kind of give back or reach out, and it just bodes to who he is as a person. He's obviously, a very talented player, second in the league in scoring. But on the flip side, he's also last year won the Community Assist Award. So So that just shows you what kind of guy he is, what type of leader he is. And you know, I think it's great for him to have that opportunity just in an organic setting, reach out to those guys, and just whatever the exchange was, you know, that comes from the heart.
How meaningful is it that this practice is being held at an HBCU?
You can't say enough about it, you know, and I think oftentimes they get overlooked. Anytime we kind of put the spotlight on HBCU, I think it's a great opportunity.
Coach, how would you assess Isaiah's development so far?
It's a learning curve, you know, for any young player. And I think his experiences might be a little different than your standard rookie. But, you know, having played in the G League gave him a little foreshadowing as far as the NBA life, NBA game, the speed of the game. But I've seen him take incremental steps, which I think is terrific for his development.
You know, I think the players themselves who played for Ignite have been asked plenty about how it compared them. But, yeah, from a coach's perspective, have you noticed a little bit the guy's a little bit further up to speed than the average rookie?
Well, I mean, for an average, probably average 19-year-old, yeah.
Yeah.
A little different, I guess, with Corey, who played, you know, 4 years and, you know, somewhat of a veteran, you know, type player. But just the speed of the game, I mean, some of the terminology I think he's already accustomed to when it comes to some of the offensive stuff. So, you know, maybe that's not as big of a deal. You still have to learn our system and our philosophy. That takes time for any other player.
Take one more question.
Coach, I know you guys aren't putting any pressure on
Ruby,
but on the broadcast, they said very soon he might be back. You guys have a date in mind
where
he might be back in the building?
No, I mean, I think, you know, we're going to just give him the time he needs. You know, whatever that is, you know, to us, you know, that's the most important thing. But he's been in constant contact, which is great. So we're on the same page in that regard. The biggest thing is getting him here and then getting him up to speed.
In that constant contact, is it any basketball conversation or is it just supporting him and whatever he needs?
Just supporting him in what he needs right now.
Thank you.
Thanks, Coach.
A candlelight vigil will be held tomorrow night at 7 p.m. at Merville High School football field for Elijah Gorham, a 17-year-old football player who passed away after sustaining an injury in a game.
We are now joined for our live sports segment with discussing a number of topics. Tarika's joining us still, and welcome Kendra. Kendra, can you hear me?
Hello.
Oh, there you are. Okay, we got you. We can't do this segment without you.
How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. So Ben Simmons is in Philly taking his physical exam. What are your thoughts, Kendra?
This is just so unexpected. I didn't expect them to report. He's still getting bashed, even though he showed up. He's still getting bashed, which he should be. You randomly show up after practically giving up on the team. We'll just see how this goes.
Yeah, the Sixers executives, they were surprised to see him show up to the facility. And, of course, he came back because he didn't want to lose all that money. but, you know, just because he's back doesn't mean he's actually going to play a game for them. It doesn't mean he's actually going to suit up. But I think that if he does actually suit up for the Sixers, I want to see that game very badly because I know Philly fans, I know they're going to be blowing the heck out of him the whole game.
And then my thing is that, okay, winning tears off. Philly fans, it's like this year, they win a championship. I feel like the Philly fans will be okay. I feel like that'll settle a lot of animosity from last year. But if they don't win, I just feel like they're still going to keep on hating them.
Well, they're not going to win, and he won't be there.
So where do you see Ben Simmons going? Do you think he'll stay in Philly, or will he be traded?
I think he'll probably get traded. I think the reason why he did show up is because he want to prove himself. He want to prove that he does have that shot and he's going to come up clutch to increase his trade value. I feel like once his trade value is increased, then I feel like he's going to get traded.
Yeah, he'll probably trade about December or January.
Let's move on to the WNBA Finals Game 2. We can talk about that and then another issue outside of with Diana Taurasi.
Yeah, so with that game, I saw somewhere, I think it was ESPN, they said that the team actually didn't even practice before the game. And then, of course, the Mercury ended up losing to the Sky, 91-77. And Diana Taurasi, she did have 17 points, but just one assist.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if Cooper continues to be clutch, I just don't feel like if the Mercury can hold her off, then they will potentially win, but it's going to be tough. They're going to need to win tonight in order to keep that going.
So the issue with Diana Taurasi, she was frustrated that she has to pay for her travel expenses with no help from the WNBA. What's behind that?
Yeah, so they were saying that she was trying to fly back to the game because her and her wife just had, I believe, their second child. And she had to pay for like her own private plane with some of her teammates, I believe. And she was hoping that the WNBA would pay for it. But due to some collective bargaining agreement issues, they weren't able to do so.
Is that fair, Kendra?
I don't think it's necessarily fair because, and even the rules, like, I know that she said it's like some people wanted to help it out within the NBA, but it's against the rules for people to help out, which I think is bogus. It's like, if you guys can't afford it, you guys don't want to help because you don't have the means or the money, let her seek outside help. Let the players seek outside help. Because even when they go to different countries, they have to pay for their way to and coming from. So it's just hard. They just need to let them seek outside sources if they cannot fund it.
James Harden, we're going back to Kyrie Irving. James Harden says he hasn't spoken to Kyrie since the Nets decided he won't be able to join the team. What are your thoughts, Kendra?
I mean, it's just tough. Because it's just like, what else should they have? It's not like they were like huge friends before joining forces together. So what else do we have to talk about if you're not going to be able to play for this team?
Right. Yeah, it's being said that Kyrie is, he's saying he's not anti-vax, but he's anti-mandate. And that he wants to be a quote-unquote voice for the voiceless. You know, I think a lot of players, they would not sit out of games just to prove a point, but I can honestly see Kyrie doing so.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
And then my thing is that Kyrie Irving, the Nets are saying that Kyrie Irving isn't there, not giving him an extension. So my thing is, okay, you don't want to get vaccine, but at the end of the day, this is costing you even more money. But the Nets don't even want to give you another opportunity to replace the chip if y'all don't get it this year.
One last, I think, NBA point. What's his Dwayne Wade's son? Zaire is signing a contract for the NBA G League to join the Utah Jazz's affiliate. Dwayne Wade is also a part owner of the Jazz.
Yeah, a few years ago, he was playing with LeBron James' son, Bronny James, out in Sierra Canyon. I remember seeing some highlights of him as well, playing in pro-am leagues. Playing against NBA players, and he was actually holding his own. He didn't look too bad. He's a bit of a slasher, not a great shooter, but he looks sort of like his dad's game. I mean, of course, his dad's much better than him. He's also left-handed, but I could see him performing around the G League.
Mm-hmm.
Kendra? Yeah, I'm not too sure about it. He really need to prove himself. Obviously, you know, with his dad being a part owner, I don't know if he would have got the same opportunity if his dad wasn't part owner of the team. So you really, it's about proving yourself. Because obviously you wouldn't have made it this far without your dad and without the name.
Right. My perspective, I absolutely have no problem with this. I grew up with a number of people who are what they call SOBs, sons of the bosses. Mm-hmm. And that happens all over the place. So,
of course.
Yeah. Let's move on to the Raiders. Owner Mark Davis says that the NFL has all the answers when asked about the Gruden situation.
Yeah, and I saw in the Athletic today as well that the Raiders defensive end, Carl Nassib, who's openly gay, he actually sat out of practice today because he said he didn't need a person today with all this fallout that's going on.
Yeah, my thing is, obviously, they do have all the answers. They were going to keep on continuing to leak emails. So, obviously, they do have the answer. The NFL did this whole big investigation on Gruden, but they do have all the answers. They forced the man to resign. So they have all the information. The Raiders owner knew that he was lost money because of the leaked emails from the NFL. So, you know, they do have all the answers compared to what he's saying.
Yeah, and, you know, when the first email went out over the weekend, everyone had to know that there were other emails that were going to come. I'm sure there's a treasure trove of emails out there. So, Justin Fields will play versus the Packers after hyperextending his knee. Kendra?
I pretty much knew this when I happened. He was going to get hurt in some form of way just because going into it, the Bears' offensive line isn't great. So, obviously, you're putting your rookie quarterback out there to possibly get hurt. And we already knew that. But at the end of the day, Dalton was the only option. They couldn't put Dalton out there after he got hurt. So, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, if Justin goes down again and then Dalton is still hurt, I believe, I mean, they don't have anybody else to even play quarterback for them.
Yeah, that's something they need to think about as the as this progresses, they're going to see about the game, but they're going to need to look for a different option, especially, you know what I mean, bring in an offensive guard off the practice squad, get an offensive guard. Y'all going to need some more help with that offensive line.
Yeah.
One more football. Mahomes says he won't place the blame for the loss on turnovers.
Yeah, he has 6 interceptions already this season, which is the same one he had all of last season. But, I mean, it's Patrick Mahomes. I expect him to turn it around. I believe they're playing the football, Washington football team this weekend, so he should kill them.
It's going to be the easy one, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, my thing is I don't know what's going on with that. And obviously, Travis Kelce, I don't even know what's going on with that. But my thing is, it's obviously it's something that's to blame. I don't know what you're saying out there on that field. You're not saying it's from the lack of weapons. It's obviously the only answer is you. Because at the end of the day, you see something nobody else is seeing. And normally you hit those passes. Normally this is the amount of interceptions that you would have throughout the season. But you're having that through the first 5 games.
Hmm. One last point. Giants, Dodgers-Giants, game 5 is tomorrow night. Who you guys got?
Kendra?
I got the Dodgers. They have way more playoff experience. I just think that their batters will just take it home. And I'm expecting them to win.
Yeah, me too. I'm expecting the Dodgers to win. You know, last night in game 4, Mookie Betts was incredible. He had he was 2-for-4, and he had 3 RBIs, and also had 1 run. But I'm going to throw a little bit of a curveball. I think that Cody Bellinger, he hasn't been too great this season. But I think
I haven't heard his name all year.
Yeah, he's been pretty bad. I actually think he's going to hit a game-winning hit from tomorrow night.
That's your prediction.
That's my whole prediction.
Go ahead, Kendra.
And then my thing is the Dodgers are 59-24 in home games, so I'm expecting them to increase that by 60. I know that the in road games, the Giants is 54-28, but I'm expecting that the Dodgers can get this win, and they can find some way to win. With all that playoff experience, y'all need to make it work.
Yeah, and also it's interesting. I believe that if the Dodgers do win, 3 of the 4 teams from last year's ALCS are right back in the same spot they were last year.
Really?
Yeah, the Astros, if the Dodgers do it, and then Braves as well.
All right. Thank you guys again for another great conversation. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to go to break. You're listening to the number one streaming station in Baltimore, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. We'll be right back.
Saturday night doesn't end at midnight. This is DJ Patrick Scientific, and no matter where you are, the party still continues every Saturday night here from midnight until 5 a.m. We bring you the same great music that you know and great music that you don't know. Local, national, and international. House, hip-hop, drum and bass, and so much more. So make sure you tune into the Audio Infusion every Saturday night here on WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community.
This is Donna Powell from The Caribbean Affair. Remember what's happening when lots of things were happening in and around the community? Now it's all about Did You Know, where I shine spotlight on your favorite artists celebrating an Earth Strong or simply commemorating their lives. Listen to me, Donna Powell, at 6:30 p.m. every Saturday right here on WEAA 88.9 FM.
News headlines, events, podcasts, and more. WEAA.org.
Welcome back to the Morgan News Hours. Thank you. Thanks for riding with us. Here's a recap of the top stories here on the Morgan News Hour. Maryland's health department is reporting 1,100 new COVID cases in the last 24 hours. 702 cases were added in just 24 hours. And the Morgan State Choir is performing tomorrow on the campus at 11 a.m. in front of Holmes Hall. I just found this out. The choir will also be on hand this Sunday at M&T Bank Stadium to sing the national anthem at the start of the Ravens and Chargers game. Now let's take a look at your weather.
Here's a look at your weather around the region. Tonight, a slight chance of showers before 8 p.m., then a slight chance of showers between 8 p.m. and 2 a.m. Partly cloudy with a low around 62. Light and variable wind. Chance of rain is 20%. Thursday, mostly sunny with a high near 80. Northwest wind, 5 to 7 miles per hour. Thursday night, partly cloudy with a low around 63. Light northwest wind. Friday, mostly sunny with a high near 83. Calm wind becoming south around 6 miles per hour in the afternoon. Friday night, a slight chance of showers after 2 a.m. Mostly cloudy with a low around 66. Chance of rain is 20%. Saturday, showers likely after 8 a.m. Mostly sunny with a high near 78. Chance of rain is 70%. Saturday night, mostly clear with a low around 51. Sunday, sunny with a high near 67. Sunday night, clear with a low around 50. I'm Shine Boggs, reporting for the Morgan News Hour.
The current temperature here on the Morgan State campus is cloudy and 72 degrees. Here's part two of the CBS Sports Radio host J.R. Jackson's interview with student reporter Tariq Turner. Jackson visited Morgan State University's School of Global Journalism and Communication yesterday. In the interview, Jackson talks about his entrepreneurial spirit, advice for aspiring sports journalists, and more.
I realized at a very young age I ain't have patience. I didn't have patience. I didn't. I always wanted to go on to the next thing. I used to say when I was younger, like, I wanted to own a toy store just so I could have stock of all the toys and I could be in charge of the toys. And that didn't change. Like, I wanted to the best of my abilities to be in control of my destiny. And I knew it was going to be difficult, and it has been hard. And so although even being an entrepreneur now, like, I have a show with CBS, and I quote unquote, technically I work for them. I view it as something as where we work together. It's mutually beneficial. They get good content for the air. I get great distribution. And so for me, it's always, what can I do next? Like, I don't always want to wait for people and tell them, hey, you can't do this or you have to do it this way. I want to have the freedom and flexibility to do that in my own accord. And so why entrepreneurial spirit? I mean, we live in a beautiful world with a lot of opportunities, and I don't necessarily believe in waiting on somebody to carve out what your destiny should be. There's so many things that we have to rely on other people. You know, here living on Earth, you can't operate. There's some people that do, but for the most part, you can't operate in a silo by yourself. You got to interact with other people. You must. There's things that you can control. There's things that you can't. But for the things that you can, I've always wanted to take the bull by the horns and control as much as I can.
Do you have any advice for aspiring sports journalists?
Yeah, you got to find, it's similar to branding. Mm-hmm. You got to find your voice. What makes you different? If I think about a lot of, let's say, sports scrums, post games, or anything, think about the image of XYZ athlete finishes or coach. They have a good game or they have a bad game, and now they're surrounded by 15, 20 journalists who are asking similar questions. Everybody's getting the same result, but when you walk away and you turn your tape recorder off, or you turn the camera off, or you stop scribbling in your notepad or your phone, you know, your approach is going to be what separates you from everybody else who got the same audio, who got the same video. What comes out of your brain, the angle that you take, the approach is what's going to make people remember what you wrote, what you said. And that's what's important. It's finding your voice, not your editor's voice, not what somebody told you to do. It's what you're comfortable in and what's going to make you stand out so you can just go forward ahead. You know, there's a lot of similarities, and there's a lot of people out, whether they're writing or whether they're on TV or radio, where it becomes real cookie cutter. Like, throw the cookie cutter thing out the way. Like, we don't need to be on an assembly line, assembly plant. Let the cookie cutter factory people be over here. Let you be one of a kind. You know, you can be the mass produced car, or you can be the exclusive car that's handcrafted, one of 150,000. You just got to figure out how you stand out, how you present yourself. What is your style? Look at everybody and go, that's them over there, but that's me. What's going to make you different? That's my advice for anyone who wants to get involved in sports journalism.
What do you envision the future of sports journalism will look like?
We're kind of getting there. We've seen it over the years where the athletes have more control and have more power over messages that they want to share. Same thing for coaches. An athlete doesn't necessarily need to do a feature with a Sports Illustrated or anybody or ESPN to get their story out. I mean, someone like Cam Newton has his own YouTube channel. Cam Newton was released by the New England Patriots. He didn't do a long form interview. Cam Newton went on his YouTube channel, sat on YouTube with his dad, and talked about his release from the Patriots. At the other end of it, we see something like All the Smoke with Steven Jackson and then Matt Barnes. And in their show, there's instances where I watch where it can be entertaining, where sometimes I look for balance. You know, you're coming from an athlete's perspective, but sometimes you want a more well-rounded approach to it. So, you know, how is sports media going to change? We see it's more open source. It's going to be more open source. Consuming sports media is like going to the buffet right now. It's like, what do you want? Are you going to get something traditionally from, you know, an ESPN or a Fox, where it's going to come from someone who might have an entertainment background? Are you going to read or get your content from The Athletic, where it still has a little bit more journalistic integrity? Are you going to get that content from an athlete's perspective? And so I think it's just about, you now have more options. It's like, how do you want to create a well-rounded meal for yourself? Are you only going to dip into the dessert? Okay, it may not be the healthiest thing, but it tastes good. Do you know, you may want to get it from a journalist. It might be your vegetables over there. You may be like, that's a healthier option. It's good for me. You might want the entertainment. That's your grain to fill you up. You know, you as a consumer have a choice. It's like, how do you want to take a well-rounded approach? And I think that's where sports media has gone. There's something for everybody. It's just what you want to put on your plate.
We want to thank you for joining us here on the Morgan News Hour this evening. I'm Randy Reed. Up next is In the Groove with your girl, Shiro. Good night. Our production tonight was brought to you by the students in the School of Global Journalism and Communication right here at Morgan State University. In our learning lab right here at the studio of WEAA 88.9 FM, led by Dean Jacqueline Jones and station manager Robert Shahid. Thank you to our student reporters, Shania Butler, Kaisha Hancock, Chardonnay Jackson, Zakiya Jennings, Jasmine Johnson, Rochelle Keaton, David Lance, Gabriel Ortiz, Kendra Pugh, Tariq Turner, and Kara Williams. An extra special thanks to Andre Melton and Sean McBean for engineering the show tonight. For engineering the show tonight. For engineering the show.